I mean, the reality is, I mean, the church not only needs to be okay with asking the hard questions, but it also needs to learn to be a little better at sitting with the hard answers.
Welcome to The Dismantle, creating community, not converts.
Hello and welcome to Dismantle Podcast, a place for community, not converts. I'm your host, Joey. On this show, we attempt to dismantle an issue that poses as problematic for the church by having a discussion with a guest who has insider experience on the subject. And we're not always going to agree, and that's okay, but we're not going to argue because our goal is to build bridges and not barriers. Our guest today is Andrew Kerbs. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, man. I'm glad we got to connect and have this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we've been trying to schedule it for a while, so I'm glad that our schedules aligned.
Tenacity always wins, man. And I appreciate you you circling back and making it happen. For our listeners who are not familiar with you or your work, give us a little bit about who you are and some of the work you do.
Sure. So, let's see. My full-time day job, I'll say it that way, is I'm a school therapist at a therapeutic day school. I work in my day job with mostly with children that are on the autism spectrum. And but I also do some contracting private practice on the side, which in that I work primarily with mostly young adults, some older adults, but folks who are deconstructing, like mostly from Christianity. People who've had backgrounds in like high demand religions and are kind of like recovering from that, trying to tease out what their values are, their own identity and stuff like that. So yeah, professionally, I've always been doing mental health stuff. My passion definitely lies in the world of deconstruction, religious trauma, church abuse, kind of whatever you want to call it. There's lots of different phrases we could use, but yeah, that's like my primary focus and kind of what I'm all about.
That's fantastic. And it really sets up some of the conversation we're going to have today, which centers around this idea of deconstruction fatigue. I don't think anybody would disagree, especially if they're listening to this show, that this work is tiring. It's difficult at times. It's constant to discuss things like patriarchy and homophobia, sexism, nationalism, racism, all the isms. But, you know, to frame our conversation, Andrew, how is deconstruction different from demolition? What's the difference between taking things apart and then blowing things completely out of the water?
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. And I mean, first, I suppose, you know, it depends who you ask, because there's certainly not even a consensus as to the definition of deconstruction, as anyone who's been in the community has found. There's a lot of argument about that. You'll hear people say things like, deconstruction without reconstruction is just destruction and things like that. So I think for me, the thing with deconstruction is that it is very intentional and methodical. You're not just, you know, so say there's one aspect of maybe Christianity that you don't like and you end up just throwing out everything. I don't think it's quite as careless as that. And so that, and maybe that's kind of what some people who are maybe critiquing deconstruction, maybe that's their concern. What they're worried about is, you know, oh, you had this maybe one bad experience, and now you're throwing the whole thing out. I don't know. I think it depends a lot who you ask again, because obviously a lot of the folks in the church who are still tenaciously defending the church, and you know, I think they would definitely equate deconstruction with demolition. But again, those of us who are, you know, more on the outside than what we used to be, would certainly disagree with that. I kind of feel like I'm rambling now, but does that kind of answer the question, or should I dive into any other area?
No, it's not a ramble at all, but yeah, I think you're right. I think because it is so difficult to pin down, it's difficult to even recognize where you would go next from that. But I think, mm-hmm. I think the emotions are similar underneath, right? Regardless of how you approach it, I think we'd all agree that it's a lot of work, and it's not just physical at times. It's not just spiritual, but it's very emotional.
Right. Yeah, it definitely is. And actually, I suppose it could be helpful. So to sort of articulate what I mean when I say deconstruction, and to kind of define it, because otherwise, you know, like, what am I talking about, right? So I guess, and yes, it's very emotionally exhausting. It can be very mentally taxing. But deconstruction, for me, when I say that, what I'm referring to, and I think some other personalities like Phil Drysdale, if anyone's familiar with him, I believe he and I see it the same way, and some others too. Basically, it's you're questioning your long-held beliefs, the current system, whatever that is, in most of our cases, Christianity of some sort. That old system is no longer able to adequately answer the questions that you're having. And lastly, whatever your newfound beliefs are, you are simply holding them more lightly than you once did. In other words, less psychological rigidity, less inflexibility, which are a lot of the key components of fundamentalist thought. And fundamentalism can show up in Christianity, it can show up in deconstruction. Fundamentalism essentially is referring to that overly rigid black and white, all or nothing type thinking that usually shows up it shows up everywhere, but it usually, in my opinion, as a counselor, therapist, the more rigid one's thinking is, probably the more suffering you're going to have, and the more problems you're going to have, basically.
And as we step into these spheres of activism, social justice, taking apart these faulty and problematic theologies and frameworks that we were given as younger individuals, we really do see people coming alive, right? And what I mean by that is people start really getting passionate about liberation in these areas, whether it's theology, whether it's psychology, sociology, just, you know, wherever it is, it's people really becoming passionate. And yet, why is it so challenging when we care for so many of these things? You know, for example, people can really be passionate about understanding the Bible correctly, but we also have to fight racism, and we also need to focus on LGBTQ inclusion. Like, is it challenging to be able to control all of these different areas of our deconstruction and not burn out?
Yeah, I definitely think burning out is, I've seen it happen many times. And yeah, kind of like you were saying, I think in a lot of ways, it's the same spirit that we had when we were even in the church. And I'm not even saying that that's necessarily a bad thing, but like oftentimes I feel the folks who were deconstructing the hardest were also the ones who were maybe studying the Bible the hardest, that were the most committed to, I want to get to the bottom of this topic, this issue, and I want to know the truth, whatever the truth is, even if it's uncomfortable. And I think that's what led a lot of folks to the place that they are now. And I think it's the same spirit that drives a lot of folks in deconstruction too. You know, you start off with maybe what at one point in your life, it was maybe just kind of a theological exercise of, okay, well, I don't like how American evangelicalism, you know, I don't like what it's morphed into, but, you know, when compared to maybe, you know, the gospel that I'm finding here in like just the New Testament, or, you know, something like that. And then, you know, it's easy to kind of like go from that to the next thing of, okay, I'm recognizing this as this system of oppression. And now I'm recognizing how I played a role in it. And now I'm opening my gaze to what are other systems that I've maybe played a role in that have been oppressive to other people. And yeah, it's kind of like, it's a domino effect. You know, like what started as just theology goes from that to, like what you said, like all of these other pieces, whether it be LGBTQ, whether it be like racism and anti-racism, just everything. There's so many different ones. And it is so easy to burn out. I think it's, you know, because it's good work. I mean, it's, you know, it's easy to be like, well, this is a good thing I'm doing. And, you know, it's almost like you shame yourself for needing that rest. And yet, you know, I think it's the same outside of the church as it is in the church. I mean, you need rest. And so if you're not being intentional about that, burnout, I think, is inevitable. It has nothing to do with the morality or the virtue of the cause. You know, without intentional rest, burnout's inevitable.
And so what does that look like? What does burnout actually look like? Is it just like, hey, I need to walk away from this for a season? Or are there like seriously psychological and you know, physical detrimental things that happen through burnout.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, both of those things, meaning, sure, for some folks stepping away for a time, I think that may be necessary, that may be appropriate. It does definitely have a real mental and even physical impact, I think, burnout, or a term that we use in the clinical counseling and psychology world is called compassion fatigue. That's another phenomenon that happens with therapists and other professional helpers, that, you know, kind of like you're working so much with these folks and their issues. Vicarious trauma is another phenomenon, another term, where it's kind of like just being in the context and in the proximity of working with all of these different issues, like it can drain you as well, just by being near it, and by analyzing it and diving into it. And so it is just important to recognize that, you know, if you're feeling exhausted, if you are feeling more prone to just anxiety and depression and things of that sort, you probably maybe need to just take a step away from some stuff. And that's not at all a moral failure. The other thing I always really like to add and tell people is that if you're waiting to seek out rest, like if you're waiting until you're fatigued to rest, you've already waited too long. We need to do much better at being proactive and resting because, you know, like from a proactive stance rather than a reactive stance.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And so talk to me about some of that proactivity. Are there guardrails? Are there limits that we should be imposing, you know, self-imposing on ourselves when it comes to deconstruction? I think a lot of people, especially when they start out, are very much excited and almost amazed at what they are learning about and what they don't know. There's sort of this never-ending tap that you just never really want to turn off as you start to become aware of certain things and new ideas. But are there certain things that we should put in place for ourselves so that we can monitor and maybe avoid burnout?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, I think like with the rest thing, for example, and that's going to look different for everybody. I mean, I don't, you know, whether that be literally staying off of social media and just taking a nap or playing video games or whatever. I mean, it's different for everybody. I think it's just being intentional about it, being proactive about it, meaning set aside time to like, okay, so for example, like I run the Instagram page, Deconstruct Everything. That page is, as the name implies, it's deconstructing everything. I kind of tackle a little bit of everything in there. And some people who come to my page think that that's kind of like my whole identity in life. I think that's all I do. And it's like, no, it's really not, you know. And if it was all I did, oh my gosh, like I think I would, you know, I my mental health would just be in tatters, because yeah, it is heavy stuff that we deal with. And so for example, like, you know, I do all kind of, I like creative writing, like writing just like different stories and whatnot, just because that's what I enjoy. That's something that is meaningful for me. Like I like reading, both, like, obviously I'm a history major too. So like the academic stuff, like I'm actually into that. That's actually interesting for me, but also just reading in general, literary stuff. Like I'm all about that. Like, so that for me personally is something that I try to just, I use that to kind of just get away from this other stuff just because I enjoy it for no other reason than that I enjoy it. And for me, that's a way of resting and recuperating. I'm also a gamer. Like I'll play different games and, you know, just again, just to be intentional about taking time to do things that I enjoy that are kind of rejuvenating for me. Because yeah, if I spent all my time doing nothing but the deconstruction work, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here doing this podcast. I mean, I'd be fried, man.
Yeah. And, you know, Andrew, we all have that friend who's really into deconstruction. And if we don't, it's probably us. But, you know, you see that burnout is coming. And maybe that's because you yourself have experienced burnout. So you sort of know what to look for. And you see some trigger signs. How do you come along somebody who is, for lack of a better word, obsessed with deconstructing from a standpoint that says, hey, I care about you, but not in a judgmental way. And the reason I ask this question is because within the deconstruction community, there's a lot of resistance to authority. I don't mean that negatively. I just mean like there's a trust that's broken and needs to be rebuilt as you walk through deconstruction. And so anybody coming with an authoritative stance saying, hey, I don't think this is best for you. Hey, I think you should limit it, might be perceived the wrong way. So how would we do that in a good way that actually benefits those individuals?
So to that point specifically, I mean, cause yeah, I totally get what you're saying about the, being suspicious of authority and rightfully so, because I think that that's been one of the things that's been abused by the church and those types of institutions for generations, you know, just the hierarchy and the power structure, power dynamics. The way I would, I think, show it most in a way that's most helpful and most authentic is honestly model it myself and then just be transparent about what I'm doing. There've been times where I've just been honest about where I'm at. Like back in January, I think I took like a 3 or 4 week break. And I was just honest about kind of where I was at with all of that. You know, it's like, it was a lot and I just needed to take some space away from all of it. Kind of regather my thoughts and all of that. So that's an example. I definitely think stepping in and telling somebody you need to be mindful of this or this is going to happen you're going to be met with defensiveness and stuff like that, understandably. So definitely, I just think modeling, doing it yourself, like especially those of us who maybe been on this path for a while and kind of see these patterns and recognize them, modeling it and then just speaking to that subject from more of a place of your own self-disclosure rather than telling somebody this is what you ought to do.
Yeah. And it's tough too, because, you know, as we care about these individuals, it also connects to our own deconstruction. As other people go through things, we're also going through things, maybe from down the road, maybe from just other experiences. Do you think that there is an end point to deconstruction where you actually say, okay, I'm not going to deconstruct anymore? And I want to be really careful about saying reconstruction, because obviously that's the antithesis of the word. But I don't necessarily think just putting it back together is the same thing as just stopping deconstruction. So I want to be clear about what I'm asking. Is there a point where you just say, okay, I'm no longer going to deconstruct because I've done enough of it?
Yeah, so my personal take on that is no. Like, to me, what deconstruction really is, it's more about the spirit and the trajectory of how you're viewing the world. It's more of a lens through which I view the world. It's not so much a linear process of, you know, to use like a metaphor of like a computer, it's not like I'm just uninstalling this shitty software and once it's off the hard drive, I'm good and I'm going to go about my day. It's more of this ongoing lens of how I view everything. Now, will it change and evolve how, like, yeah, it'll absolutely change. And for example, you know, we keep calling it deconstruction and then that's such a buzzword right now. It maybe is not even going to be called that in 5 years. I've been deconstructing for about 7 years. I didn't even learn that word until a year and a half ago. But I'd been in effect doing it for 6 years. I just didn't know there was a term for it. So, you know, I'm not so much hung up on the, like the word is just a construct, but to me, what it really comes down to is learning to not take anything for granted. And I'm not saying you can't have beliefs or shouldn't have beliefs. That's not at all what it's saying, but the beliefs that I, like for me, for example, the beliefs that I do have, I hold them more lightly. I am very much open to the idea that I could be wrong, and I probably am wrong about a good many things. What I believe tomorrow very well may be different than what I believe today. I'm not trying to just gather up the information to reinforce what I currently think I believe to be true, which is, whereas when I was, you know, very strongly in the church, I mean, confirmation bias, like that's what I did. you know, I was trying to shore up my defenses and be a strong Christian and, you know, all of these things. Whereas now it is a different feeling, because I think learning to be okay with uncertainty is one of the big central themes of deconstruction. And a lot of folks are not comfortable with that. They don't like it. It feels different. It feels maybe unsafe even, because it is so unfamiliar, which I think, and I don't mean this, I do not mean this judgmentally at all, but I mean, I'll just say it. I think that is then what causes a lot of people to put emphasis on, you need to reconstruct, you need to reconstruct. Okay, you've deconstructed, but now what? You need to land somewhere. And I guess, you know, if it works for you, cool. Me personally, I just kind of like smile. I'm like, I need to reconstruct or what? Like, I'm perfectly content with where I'm at. I'm perfectly content with the uncertainty that I have. It's not to say I don't have opinions about things like the existence of God or the nature of Jesus of Nazareth. Was he really the Son of God? You know, all of those questions. Yeah, it's not that I don't have opinions about those things. It's just, I don't need to try to sit down and define for sure what I do or don't believe. And then, you know, so I feel like in a lot of cases, that desire and that need to reconstruct in some ways kind of goes against the very essence of what deconstruction, at least for me, was in the first place, which is learning to sit with that uncertainty, learning to, you know, question things and not, you know, necessarily have to find hard set answers that are black and white.
Right. And as we, if we are still in these spaces, these church institutions, for some of our listeners, they no longer attend church. Others are still involved and still on staff in leadership positions, things like that. How does the church then enable, maybe this is a two-part question, so let's focus on the first half of it. How does the church enable deconstruction? And then I'll ask my follow-up, because I think the answer to the second might be different based on the answer to the first. So how does the church enable deconstruction?
That's a good question. I mean, maybe it depends on the church and what they're about, you know, because the reality is part of what deconstruction is. I mean, the church not only needs to be okay with asking the hard questions, but it also needs to learn to be a little better at sitting with the hard answers. And what I mean by that, you know, I've had some, pastors and other leaders in the church in the past that I've spoken with who, you know, they kind of did the whole, they were like all gung-ho for like, oh yeah, we love the hard questions. But then you ask the hard question and then it was a string of proof texts from the Bible. I was like, okay, but what if the Bible is not valid? What if it's not authoritative? You know, let's just hypothetically even say that maybe it's never was supposed to be taken as literally as maybe some of you guys do, you know, can we sit with that? And so, yeah, I mean, I think there are some big implications, you know, and it depends on your church. But yeah, I think just being more open to some of these questions and just the uncertainty that follows. I know a lot of Western Christianity is pretty adverse to that, so generally speaking. I mean, so yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure I have a good answer for that. And certainly different denominations handle that sort of thing differently. But you know, the churches that I do see, that I personally seem better able to handle it, and that I have met folks who seem to be, you know, actually deconstructing in a fairly healthy way, where, you know, but where they're able to deconstruct honestly and authentically and still maintain a meaningful church community. The churches where I've seen that happen most frequently are the ones that are more LGBTQ affirming, who are more open to women in leadership, things like that. So, again, just my observation, but for what it's worth, that's what I've noticed.
Yeah. And that's a great observation to point out, that asking hard questions is one thing, being okay with tough answers or no answers at all is totally different.
Right.
Because we do sort of have this system set up that where you ask questions, you immediately have answers because you have the book that has all the answers. And yet what deconstruction asks of us is to say, there might not be a good answer to this.
Right.
And I think too, for that second part of the question. You know, if we are going to enable deconstruction, then to the entire subject of what we're discussing, how do churches then care for those who are deconstructing without allowing them to become fatigued? You know, how does the care aspect come into play from a church that enables people to take apart some of these ideas?
Yeah, you know, I think that honestly, the best thing I think that the church can do as far as caring for those who are deconstructing to help prevent fatigue and burnout, I really think the biggest piece is just not imposing certain answers that they're supposed to arrive at and being patient. You know, I actually will use like a firsthand example from my own life. You know, one of my best friends is, so my background is Seventh Day Adventism. And one of my best friends is still actively a pastor within that denomination. And I know initially people would think, wow, you guys probably don't even talk anymore, do you? Like, no, actually we talk all the time. We get along great. and I was going through my deconstruction a few years ago when I first met him, and he was the pastor, the new local pastor at, I say my church, my parents still went to this church. I did not and had not for a few years, but at any rate, that was my connection, how I came to know him. And I remember that, you know, he was more interested in just being friends. And I was very suspicious at first, because, you know, what pastor wants to be your friend without ultimately trying to get you into their genuinely just became friends. I never went back to the church. We're still friends. But because of that, though, I still do kind of have a connection to these communities and still have and still value meaningful, like, religious, spiritual, theological type discussions with these folks, as opposed to being someone who, you know, has totally cut them off. And it's just, I'm like, you know, maybe has had a lot more of a hostile experience and has just cut people off completely. I am fortunate that was not my experience. And so I think that mentality is probably what the church can do best, because I'll tell you one thing, like, I would have definitely been cutting him off and burning some bridges had that relationship taken a turn where, you know, it was basically just trying to coerce me to get back into regular church attendance, for example. So I think patience, I think just, you know, we talk about building community, and really, I think that starts with relationships. You know, if people feel like there's ulterior motives to you being friendly, and in a lot of cases that with church and church membership, that is the case, you know, they're going to see that bullshit from a mile away, especially people who have already been burned by the church once and have left. They're going to spot that bullshit a mile away. So it's like, you know, if churches really want to help, I really do think that just patience and kindness and befriending and being kind and interacting with these folks, but doing so in a genuine way where it's not a means to an end. The community, the relationship is the end. It's not just a gimmick to get folks back into membership.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, those are great insights. I've really enjoyed our conversation. If people were interested in following up with you, following some of your content online, point us to where we could do that online.
Yeah, absolutely. So currently, I'm pretty much just on Instagram. And so my name on Instagram is deconstructeverything, deconstruct_everything. But yeah, if you search, obviously, deconstruct everything, or my name, Andrew Kerbs, that my name is also on this Instagram. So either way, you will find me.
Awesome. We'll throw it all in the show notes. But again, thanks for being on the show.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
And that wraps up Dismantle Podcast. Until next time, don't complain about the things you're not willing to change.